Good evening, everyone. This is Steve Santaciro, your state senator here in the 10th District in Bucks County. Thank you for joining us tonight. This is the third telephone town hall that I've held in a little over a month now on the issue of the coronavirus pandemic generally. The first two calls, if you participated, you might remember, were focused primarily on the health aspect of the virus. We had medical professionals and a researcher talking about some of the issues relating to the spread of the virus, how to protect ourselves, and some of the work that's being done now to research being done into a potential vaccine as well as tests for antibodies. Tonight we're going to switch it up a little bit. Tonight we are going to talk about mostly unemployment benefits and some of the other things which have been done both at the federal and state level to help individuals and businesses as we try to navigate what has become a very difficult time for our economy in light of the stay-at-home order that the governor has issued here in Pennsylvania. And we're not alone here in Pennsylvania in this regard, obviously. Many other states throughout the country are facing equally difficult times with our economy. And as a consequence, you know, the federal government has stepped in already with several stimulus bills that have had an impact. And we here in Pennsylvania have done the same thing and continue to address many of the needs that people in our state have as a consequence of the shutdown. But I'm very I'm honored tonight to have a friend and someone who is really going to offer, I hope, a great deal of insight into what's happening here in PA on the unemployment side of the equation. Secretary Jerry Oleksiak, the Secretary of our Department of Labor and Industry. Secretary Oleksiak has held that position since September of 2017. Prior to that time, he served as president of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, the largest teachers union in Pennsylvania, and I've known him for a long time. I am myself a former member of PSCA when I was a teacher at Bensalem High School, and in his time working at PSCA, Secretary Oleksiak was a great advocate for public education here in Pennsylvania. But I think it's probably fair to say that the time in his career that he looks back most fondly on is still his 30-plus years as a teacher in the classroom. And, you know, we're grateful for the work he's done in that regard, in championing education across the state, and now, of course, serving the people of Pennsylvania as Governor Wolf's Secretary of Labor and Industry. With Secretary Oleksiak is Susan Dickinson, and she is a director of unemployment compensation benefits, and she will be as well answering many of the questions that you have this evening. So before we get underway, let me turn it to the Secretary. Mr. Secretary, would you like to make some initial comments before we start?
I would, Senator. Thank you, and thank you to your constituents who have joined us tonight. As you said, we are in very challenging and difficult times, and we are doing all we can in the Department of Labor and Industry, and particularly in our Unemployment Compensation Bureau, to meet the demands, the needs that people have right now. Just to put some of this in perspective, in the 3 weeks before the mitigation efforts began and we were really impacted by the virus, we had a total of 40,000 new unemployment claims total in those 3 weeks. In less than 3 weeks after, we crossed the million mark. And we have thus far, since March 15th, processed 1.7 million new claims for unemployment compensation. And we've paid out about $2.7 billion in benefits. So that's in just in the past 4 or 5 weeks. So we have been very busy. We've also, and we'll talk about this in more detail, are responsible for administering part of the Federal CARES Act through our agency. And some people who have received unemployment have begun to receive the extra $600 that the federal government provided as part of the federal pandemic unemployment compensation program. And we've paid out over $900 million in that to over 1,510,000 folks. So we've paid out a total of about $3.5 billion in benefits since this has begun. And we were talking beforehand, and I mentioned that that's great if you're on the right side of the statistics, but we know that there are many people who are having difficulty getting through, have a lot of questions about their claims, and we want to respond to those folks. These are our friends, our neighbors, our relatives. I have family members that have been impacted by this, as we all have. We've done a lot in the agency. We've brought back 70 retirees to work with us. We've brought in about 500 staff that we're training from within labor and industry who used to work in unemployment compensation and from other agencies that are offering their services. We've hired 100 new intake interviewers, the first people that deal with claims as they come in. And we'll have them on board by the middle of May. We've upgraded our technology. Our system is very old. We have are set to go online with a new system in October, but we have upgraded the current system. We've added some artificial intelligence to it, the IBM Watson program, and we've got close to 100,000 folks that have used that. Just about two weekends ago, around April 18th, we went live with the application for the PUA program, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. And that's for folks who traditionally are not eligible for unemployment. So these are people who are self-employed, who have 1099s, independent contractors, gig workers. And we've processed over 107,000 new claims there. And the benefits should be starting in the middle of May for that. We had to create a whole new system to do that. Part of the federal regulations stipulated that was had to be independent of our traditional system. So we have been very busy. We realize there's a lot of work to do. We're looking forward to answering your questions this evening. And as Senator mentioned, we have Susan Dickinson is here from our policy office, who I told Steve, she's the smart one in the group. She really understands the system and will answer your questions as fully as we can. So thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Secretary. And again, I'm grateful for you taking the time to be with me and my constituents tonight. And Susan, thank you as well. This is a good time to remind everyone that if you want to be connected live to ask a question tonight of either Secretary Oleksiak or me, press *3 on your phone. Again, *3 at any time during the course of the call, and you will be connected. We've also received, as we usually do, a number of questions ahead of time, and I'm going to intersperse those with our live calling callers tonight. I'm going to start with one of those because it's a question that I think impacts a lot of folks in our area here in Bucks County because we're right on the border with New Jersey. We have a lot of constituents who live in Pennsylvania and work in New Jersey. They have to file in New Jersey for their claim. But in cases where they have worked some of the time in Pennsylvania and some of the time in New Jersey, they need to file a combined wage claim. Can you walk us through the best way to advise them as to how they can get credit for full benefits that they are qualified for? Which state should the claim be filed in? For instance, if they worked more days in New Jersey, should they file there? Or if they got paid more, even if it was less time in PA, should they file in Pennsylvania?
Hello, thank you for having me. I will address this question, and this is going to get into the weeds a little bit.
Sure.
I would say, you know, unemployment is a complicated program even on a good day. And now that we have this pandemic happening and, you know, the volume of claims has gone up so much, of course, so many issues come up. And it's a lot of education, a lot of people who haven't filed before. So when it comes to combined wage claims, That's actually a program that's considered a federal program, and the federal government tells the states how they have to administer the program and what eligibility looks like. So if someone's worked in two different states, the way that you determine eligibility is you have to look at what the base year is of your unemployment claim. Without trying to get too technical, the base year is what we're going to look at for your work history, how much money you earned, how many credit weeks you have. A credit week is a week in which you earned $116. We're going to look at all of that and determine if you have enough of a work history to have an unemployment claim, and also how much money you're eligible for. So the base year on any in Pennsylvania is the last four completed quarters. I'm sorry, the first four completed quarters of the last five. What that means is if you open a claim right now in April, your base year is all of 2019 from January through December. If you opened a claim back in March, which was one quarter ago, it was a month ago, but it was a quarter ago, then your base year is October 2018 through September 2019, and it slides forward every quarter, 3 months. So to determine whether or not you can file in either state, all you need is at least a dollar of benefits in that other state during the base year. It doesn't matter how much or how little you worked. As long as you have some earnings reported to that state for that quarter, you can have a claim in that state. It doesn't go off of where you live or anything like that. It has to do with where you worked and if those wages are in your base year. So if I then had wages in both Pennsylvania and New Jersey in my base year, what I would do is go to the websites of both and research the states and see how much they pay. States all pay different amounts as a weekly benefit amount. They pay different, differing numbers of weeks. So Pennsylvania pays anywhere from 18 to 26 weeks. Some other states pay longer than that. They may pay 30 weeks. I think Florida is very short. They pay something like 16 weeks. So you have to kind of compare and see what the benefits are for each program to make your decision on which state you want to file in. And then that's completely up to the individual. So usually if we get someone on the phone, we can kind of coach them in this, but we still can't tell you where to file. That's always your decision. But we can at least try to provide the information. And there is a lot of good information on our website, www.uc.pa.gov, about unemployment benefits in Pennsylvania.
Great. Thanks, Susan. I appreciate that. And obviously, if we have any follow-up questions live, we'll be happy to take those as well. So once again, star 3 will connect you to us, and you'll be able to ask a question live. Do we have anyone right now that we can connect? Star 3. Again, star 3. We have Charlie Gorin is next. Charlie, are you on the line?
Yes, hello.
Hey, Charlie. How are you?
Hey. Well, I'm hanging in there. Yep. I am a substitute teacher. I was a building sub, so I had a regular daily assignment, but I was day-to-day, so I was one of the first people furloughed. I applied for unemployment. I never received my PIN in the mail. It doesn't seem to be possible to request to get that to be resent without talking to somebody over the phone, which is, you know, playing roulette. What do I do? Mm-hmm.
Hey, Charlie.
Great question, Susan.
On our website last week, we put up a PIN reset request form. So if that's all you need, because I should back up a little bit, because we also have an email resource account, but the emails we've gotten are so voluminous that simple things like someone who just needs a PIN reset, we wanted a way to be able to do that faster. And, you know, it's a very simple, easy process. So if you go to our website, www.uc.pa.gov, scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, and there's a blue button there that says Contact Us. So click on that button. It takes you to a page with all sorts of contact information, and one of those is our PIN reset request form. So you can just fill that out and submit it, And a reset request shouldn't take more than just a couple days for us to do the request in the system, and then it prints out and gets mailed to you right away, probably, you know, 2-3 days later.
Great. Thanks very much, Susan. Charlie, thank you for your question. Again, *3 to be connected this evening, *3. Let me go to one of the previous questions that we received. It's kind of similar to what Charlie was asking. I applied for regular unemployment 5 weeks ago and still haven't gotten a PIN.
So yes, the PIN request information is the same. I won't go over that again. But I do also want to provide one of the frequent reasons. Actually, I've seen two reasons why people aren't getting PINs at this point. Because at this point, we're caught up on PIN generation and PIN mailing. It's been 2 or maybe 3 weeks now since we've been completely caught up on that. There are no backlogs. So if someone doesn't have a PIN, that tells me that it's something specific to their claim. And one of the more popular reasons is that when our system did the check with the Social Security Administration for their identity, something didn't match in the identity records. We did put messaging up on our website saying, please, when you file your claim, make sure it matches, you know, what's on your Social Security card. But, you know, a lot of times people might have like a nickname, like instead of William, it might be Bill, or maybe they don't put, you know, a suffix there or something like that. So if it doesn't match exactly what Social Security has, it drops off on an error list, and we go through all those, you know, every day. We're still probably about 4 weeks back. Well, a little less than that, 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks back on checking those. So that would be a reason for a delay in getting your PIN. And the other reason is simply some people have just given us the wrong address. And of course, we're not going to know that. It's only once individuals end up contacting us that we read them their address and they realize it's wrong, and then we can change it. So if of course, no one ever thinks they put down the wrong address. So I would say if you think you put down the wrong address, email us. But, of course, you know, there's really no way for people to know. They usually think it's a system problem, and then when we look at it, it's just the wrong address.
So Susan, is it true then once people put the initial application in, they can't go back and look at the application to see, like, if they're waiting 5 weeks to see whether they somehow put the wrong information in?
If they printed out their application, there's an option at the end you can print, then of course they can see it. But of course, anyone else who wants to see their application, they can't get in to see their personal information without the PIN. So that gets you in a catch 22, because of course that's what that's for, the PIN. if they printed it out, I would recommend reviewing it. But if you don't have that print and you're not receiving anything, I would say it's either the identity verification or a wrong address.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. So I guess we should just remind folks to, you know, obviously go through the application very carefully before they submit it, and do print it out before you do hit send. Okay, next we have Eileen on the phone. And again, *3 will connect you directly to our call this evening. Eileen.
Yes. Hello. Yes,
good
hello.
Evening, Eileen. Go ahead. Eileen, are you there? Eileen, are you you on the line? Okay,
yes,
great.
I'm
go
here.
Ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. First is, when you do call Pat with your PIN, it asks you a question. Did you work? Or were you absent from work during the week you are claiming? To me, it's a little confusing. So I'm not working, but I'm not really absent. Like, I feel like the question is confusing. I'm not absent. I'm just not I'm unemployed. So are you supposed to say no or yes? Because the first part is no, I'm not working. And were you absent? Well, no, I wasn't absent. But I didn't know what to put, so I constantly am putting no every time I call. So I just wanted to make sure that's the right answer.
Okay, thanks.
Yes,
Susan, can you help with that?
Sure. It sounds like you're doing the right thing. So the question is really asking for those two things, and based on unemployment law. So if you worked, You know, of course, you have to say yes, and then you have to tell us how much earnings that you earned for the week. Again, according to unemployment law, if someone turned down work for the week, they have to report that to us as earnings, and we have to deduct that as if they did work. So that's why it's asked in such a strange way. It's just a throwback to legalese. So it's just looking for someone, you know, anyone who has earnings to report whether they're real earnings or whether they are earnings that they missed because they turned down some work. So as long as you didn't turn down work and you didn't have any work available and you just didn't work, then you would say no and you'd be fine.
Okay. And my second question is, thank you. My second question is, I have two part-time jobs, and I did receive my PIN. I believe it was just for one of the part-time jobs. I haven't received any other information on the second one. And when I went online, it said that my status was AB date 322. I don't know what the AB date means, but I guess that means the date that I was unemployed. And then it did say that my benefit payment for 411 and 418, and it gives you an amount, but nothing has been put in my bank account, or I did my direct deposit. I didn't do a credit card. So I haven't received any information on that, and I called the bank, and they said there's no deposits, and they didn't know anything further. So I was wondering, is there a backlog on getting paid?
No, as long as there were no issues on your claim, payment happens automatically, so there's no human intervention needed. So what was the day you filed for your biweekly claims? Hello, Eileen?
Eileen might not be on the line any longer. Yeah, she might not be on the line anymore.
Okay. I'll answer generally, and that is if, in case she's listening, it usually takes 2 days for the payments to get onto your card. So if she filed yesterday and she was just checking her payments online today, that would be why she doesn't have them yet. They'll be arriving tomorrow. And also for direct deposit, if she feels there is some sort of issue with direct deposit, our Treasury Department are the ones who process all of the direct deposit. So their phone number is on our website on our contact us page, and she can contact the Treasury Department directly just to make sure that, you know, her direct deposit was processed.
Great, thank you. Let me go to one of the questions that were submitted ahead of time again. I have exhausted my regular unemployment benefits. When will the PEUC program that provides an additional 13 weeks of benefits start?
So that should be coming soon. What we're doing right now is reaching back in our archives to find everyone who's exhausted since it's like the beginning of July 2019. And we're putting those all together in a file, and we have to notify everybody that they could be eligible for this and what the instructions are. So we're getting that together now. And we hope to have that mailing out in you know, the next 2 weeks or so to give people instructions if they have to do anything. We're not 100% sure yet. We have the first round of federal guidance that we received, which we were waiting for. There is supposed to be a second round, so that would be very helpful to ensure that we're administering the program correctly. But, you know, it's a system that we used 10 years ago, so it's already created, it's already there. We just have to get it resurrected and get the information out.
Great. Thanks very much. Okay, next live question we have is from Dave in New Britain. Dave, you're on the line.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I had a two-part question. The first part you've already answered. The second part has to do with the federal stimulus. I'm wondering why so many non-virus organizations received money which could or should have gone to individuals or businesses.
Dave, help me with your question. When you say non-virus organizations, what specifically are you talking about?
Okay, let's just start with the Kennedy Center. Why did organizations such as the Kennedy Center or NPR receive dollars from a tremendous stimulus package that they have nothing to do with the stimulus package nor with the virus? It's right. concerning so, to a taxpayer.
Right. So, yeah, obviously that question is probably better directed to federal officials in terms of, you know, what the stimulus bills allowed. Obviously, the stimulus legislation that was passed by Congress, both the most recent iteration, but also the previous ones, dealt with many different categories of money that would be available. Obviously, the one that we're focusing on now, especially with last week's bill being passed, is the help to small businesses and additional money that was put into that program, because the first round of that was not adequate to handle the need that was out there. But the original stimulus bill, the CARES Act, had many other aspects to it. And so those recipients could have fallen under a number of different categories. And I'm just, you know, not able to answer that, you know, sitting here tonight. Again, I think that question would be best posed to either the congressman's office or someone else in the federal government. But thank you for your question, Dave. I am going to go back to the previous questions that came in. And this one has to do with the additional $600 payment through the CARES Act. And the question essentially is, when will those payments begin?
Go ahead.
You got it. You go ahead.
The $600 payments started back the first full week in April. They are payable for weeks ending April 4th and later. So, as a first point of clarification, if someone, you know, was paid on April 4th, that means that they were not paid for weeks that were eligible for the stimulus money, because they would have been paid for weeks in March. So the actual claim week ending April 4th, if you claim that as a week of benefits and you're paid money for that week, that's when you receive the stimulus. So that's in effect from April 4th through the week ending July 25th. And those payments are made separately from the regular benefit payment. So, for example, if I were to file this coming Sunday for 2 weeks, I would receive my regular 2 weeks of benefits in my account probably Tuesday or Wednesday, usually, depending on if you have a debit card or a direct deposit and how your bank handles it. So you get your benefits Tuesday or Wednesday, and then about a week later on Tuesday or Wednesday, you should receive your two $600 payments. So it's about a week apart, depending on which day of the week you file. It could be a little shorter, a little longer. It'll never be more than 13 days, and that's only for people who decide to file on Fridays, which is very few people. Most people file early in the week. But if you file on a Friday, you might be waiting a full 2 weeks, but almost a full 2 weeks to get the $600 piece. Of course, you're going to get your regular benefits, 2 to 3 days later, like usual. It's just the $600 will come later, because we submit all of those $600 payments to the bank for all of our claimants one time every week at the end of the week. So that's why it ends up strange like that.
Understood. Great. Thank you. Next, we have a live caller. We have Audrey. Audrey, you're on the line.
Hello. How are you?
We're great. How are you, Audrey?
Good. Actually, I'm calling for my children. I'm 68 years old and retired, but I have two sons that are self-employed and a daughter-in-law that's self-employed. A week ago Saturday, they came out with a self-employed application. Like they dangled it in front of everybody's face. Now they're waiting for phase two, which is supposed to be when they can file. I just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't understand why these people have to. My son and his wife are self-employed. They have gotten nothing. They have gotten. They don't get. They haven't gotten the stimulus check because they pay taxes. So, you know, they don't have the information. So I just don't understand why it has taken so long. Why did they have to wait? I think they said another 21 days before phase two comes out. I mean, it doesn't make sense. Other states, Jersey is rolling. I mean, I know other states that are rolling and have this, you know, going forward. So I guess I'm just frustrated for them and just frustrated for all the other people out there that are self-employed and just can't get anything.
So, I can
thank you, Audrey. Secretary?
Thank you. Yeah. We understand the frustration. We, as I said, we feel it as well. The Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which is the one that did go live last Saturday, we had to wait for the guidelines from the federal government after the CARES Act was passed. Part of the guidelines said that we could not put those dollars, mix those dollars into our traditional unemployment compensation system. So we had to create a standalone system to begin to accept those applications. We had that ready to go last Saturday, and that's when it did go live. We could have waited, but had we waited, then it would have been even longer for people to be in line, basically, to get their benefits. We fully expect that the system to be ready to begin accepting, you know, doing the monetary determinations and getting benefits out starting sometime next week. Susan, do you want to provide any more details there?
No, that pretty much covers it. I mean, it's the same timing as regular unemployment as well. So if you open a regular unemployment claim, you then don't file for benefits and receive payments for another 2 weeks. So this is actually the setup of this is the same. So we started with the collection of initial applications, and then 2 weeks later, which will be this weekend about, we'll be able to then open up for filing and payments. So it's, you know, it's the same timeline kind of as regular UC.
Yeah, I can't speak to what's going on in Jersey. I know we were one of the first 10 or 12 states to have our system up and running. I don't know of any states. The last I had heard, there were only two. That was Rhode Island and Texas that were actually beginning to disperse funds. I don't know, Susan, if you have any other information on that.
Now, I know that, you know, nationwide, the first state to go fully live with their PUA program was Rhode Island. And Rhode Island is a very small state. Their population is just over 1 million people. And, you know, as Jerry said at the beginning, we took 1 million claims just in our first 2.5 weeks. So they were up and running first of all the states, but then no one else was really up and running. Other states that are taking applications are doing the same thing as we are pretty much, taking the upfront application and waiting until they get the processing in place. There are a couple other states, and New Jersey might be one of them, that are actually processing payments now. However, all of us received stern warnings from the U.S. Department of Labor not to push forward too much because they have additional guidance for us. So that guidance was just issued last night. And then we had to work with our vendor today to say, oh my gosh, now we have to change all these things. So, you know, we still plan on being on time with what we were planning. But it is a very heavily guarded program at the federal level, and they want to make sure that benefit integrity is there. They don't want us rushing too fast. They want us following their rules, making sure that we build that all into the system. So, and that's not just Pennsylvania, that's all the states. So, you know, as they give us more information, we then have to adjust and change things. So we still plan on being live. You know, it was a two-week time delay from the time we issue our initial claim link to the time that we're going to be rolling out the full system. So we're aiming for this weekend unless anything goes wrong, but, you know, so far we're on track.
Great. Thanks very much. Next we have on the line Aaron from Yardley. Again, Star 3 connects you live to the call tonight. Aaron, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can. Yes.
Thank you for being here to answer our calls. I have two questions. My first is that I started receiving my benefits finally, but I filed a little late. Like a lot of people, my last day of working was March 13th. By March 14th, I was not, but I was not sure if my job was going to continue or not. Anyway, I started filing in April, and I said which my last day of work was and my last paycheck, but I only received money from like the period of when I filed. Is there any way for me to claim the money from the time I was not working since I filed later?
So there is. That's called a backdating request. So you would have to get in touch with us, and I know that that's very difficult these days. If anyone tries calling us, I always say call later in the week because Thursdays and Fridays are lighter on the phone.
Every time I call, nobody comes through.
There's live chat also as well. That also gets busy, although we just expanded our hours. So now live chat's available from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. There's also email as well. You can send an email to uchelp@pa.gov. They are getting through it slowly. We're about 4 weeks back now because we've received so many emails. But those are the best ways to get in touch. It is just high volume right now, no matter which way you try to get to us. So the backdating request, you can provide the information, if you send an email, provide the information, and then they'll give it to an examiner who then has to look at the information and see if you're approved or not. And what they'll do is they'll call you and have a conversation. So the backdating, of course, is for any weeks that you were unemployed. I know that there's a lot of confusion right now with, someone wasn't going to be employed, but then their employer paid them back weeks, and that we've gotten a lot of questions about that. So just as long as you were unemployed and you didn't receive payment of any kind, then you can request the backdating for those weeks.
Okay, great. And would you say, again, there are three ways, the email, live chat, or phone, and you'd say the phone calling is better later in the week. Any time of day, live chat might be better, first thing in the morning, midday, what would you say?
I think all of it kind of fills up quickly first thing in the morning, although the 7 a.m. is new to us this week, so I'm not sure how they're doing. It used to be 8 a.m., so you could maybe try that first hour. If others are not aware that we're open an hour early, they may be trying at 8, so you may be able to slip in there. Usually at the tail end, I know when it comes to the telephones, the tail end of the day is usually the easiest to get through to us. So I would imagine with live chat, it's probably similar.
Okay, great. And when's tail end of the day for the telephone? Is that 6 o'clock or?
For phones, it's 4 o'clock. So we used to be open 8 to 4 3 days, and then 12 to 6 one day, and then 8 to 12 one day. Anyway, we've nixed that, and now we're just open 8 to 4 every day, Monday through Friday, for phone hours. That's just the phone hours. The offices are doing work and open longer than that. Well, technically, they are open, but most people are working from home now. But the actual hours at the phone queue is available is 8 to 4.
Right, and thanks very much.
As Susan explained, the folks that we have a lot of people working overtime, and when they're done with the phones, they are helping to process some of those claims manually that we talked about. So we have folks working on the weekends. We have our mailroom working around the clock to get, as Susan mentioned, the backlog of pins that we had that's been reduced because of that. So we are doing all we can to meet this unprecedented demand.
Right, and that is really the problem. Of course, it is unprecedented. And I know folks are being very patient, and I understand the frustration. But everyone in the department is working very hard to try to get these issues just as quickly as they can. But thank you for the recommendations in terms of when is best to reach out. Next, we have from New Hope, we have Bill, and again, Star 3 connects you live to the call tonight. Bill, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a two-part question. First part is to if you could confirm furloughed employees are eligible for the same level of unemployment compensation as a laid off employee. And then secondly, can a furloughed employee volunteer to do the same job if the volunteering is not during business hours and that volunteering does not jeopardize their unemployment compensation?
Great question. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
All right. So all of the various terms for unemployment, laid off, lack of work, furlough, in the world of unemployment, they're all the same. So, you know, there'd be no difference if someone was downsized, and their position was eliminated, or the employer simply doesn't have enough orders coming in and someone's hours are reduced or eliminated. So those are all the same. Now, when it comes to volunteer type work, if I understand correctly, the volunteer work, if it's kind of intermittent, it's not taking you full time, then it should be okay. Under normal circumstances, volunteer work may get in the way of benefits simply because it keeps a person from being available to accept actual paid work. Now, of course, in current day, the able and available provisions of unemployment law are very loose right now. And again, the federal government, they have a lot to do with these programs. So they advised us to not be as strict with able and available as we normally are. So as long as someone, because everyone's stuck at home, so how can you be available to work if you're stuck at home and places aren't open? So the able and available provisions are, just as long as you would be able to accept some sort of work, theoretically, whether that be from your home, a telework type of thing, or somewhere else that's still open, as long as you're available to accept work if it comes your way, you should be fine.
Great. Thanks very much. Again, *3, and you will be connected directly to the line tonight. Next, we have live Justin from Percocet. Justin, go ahead. You're live.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm fortunate enough to still be working currently, and I guess my question is, I know there's a lot of money floating around to the people who unfortunately did lose their positions or in really difficult times. And I guess in the future, where is this money going to come from? Is this something that we need to prepare? Is this going to be coming out of taxes in the future? Or where is all this money going to be pulled from down the road?
Are you talking about for the current benefits now or for benefits if we're in another crisis down the road or?
Well, I guess it's more so because there's so much unemployment that mm-hmm. More than I don't know if there's a budget for it, but I would imagine that mm-hmm. The system is being taxed greatly right now with this
right.
high demand, and I'm just not
right.
sure how are we going to satisfy this and kind of bring everything back to like a nominal, or is this something that we're just going to have a deficit that's going to be kind of now just lingering, or is there some sort of I just don't know how we're going to teeter the scale back to normal.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think the first thing, Justin, is, as a matter of economics, is making sure that when things can open up again on a broad way, in a broad-based way, so that, it's safe from a health perspective and we can start reopening business, that there are enough people with income so that there is demand for goods and services so that our economy can bounce back. I mean, we live primarily in a consumer-based economy now, and the extent to which the economy is going to be able to rebound is going to be directly related to how many people are in the marketplace and able to purchase things. And that's why making sure that we provide pretty robust unemployment relief as well as loan programs and grant programs to businesses, incentivizing them to keep employees on payroll. Those are really important policy goals so that when we get to that point and things start to open up again, hopefully there will not be a long gap before the economy can really start to heat up again. And as the economy grows, then, you know, we should have more revenue coming in to not just state government, but the federal government as well. So the idea behind stimulus that helps fund these types of programs is that in severe downturns like this, it's a unique position of that the government is in to be able to spend to get us to a point where we can get back to recovery. And then once you're in recovery, the economy expands and hopefully, you know, have increased revenue coming in. But that's, you know, that's where we are right now. And I don't think there is really an alternative, especially when you, you know, you hear many of the stories we've heard tonight, and I'm sure the Secretary's office has heard, and I know our office has heard over the last month of both working families who have lost their income, lost their jobs, as well as business owners who've seen their life's work threatened as a consequence of the shutdown, which, of course, is necessary if we are going to, at the end of the day, mitigate the spread of this virus and save lives. So it's a balancing act. It's a tough road we're on right now. But I do believe at the end of the day, the combination of what we're doing on the medical side to save lives and the benefits that we're providing families and businesses that we're, some of which we're talking about tonight, that combination is what's going to get us through this pandemic and to a place where the economy can, again, be healthy. So star three is the way you connect to us live tonight. The next person we have on is Patricia. Patricia, you're live. Go ahead.
Thanks, Senator. My question is, once we reach the yellow phase of the governor's plan, what is the criteria to advance to the green phase?
Right. Well, I don't have that list in front of me at the moment. I can we'll try to pull that up. But I think right now the focus for us, at least here in the Southeast, is on getting to the yellow phase. That is going to be, a tough enough task ahead of us because of the continued rate of increase we have in the number of COVID cases that we have, not just here in Bucks County, but obviously Philadelphia and the other surrounding counties. I think we're probably not close to getting to the green phase right now. I think, hopefully we're not too far away from getting to the yellow phase. But I think, again, what folks need to remember is that we're, even when we have a partial reopening of our economy, we're going to be in a new normal where social distancing, wearing masks, doing all those things that we've now become pretty used to prevent the spread of the virus will still be with us, even though we will have, greater opportunity to engage in, our ordinary day-to-day activities from a business perspective. We're still going to have to be careful about the spread of the virus. So I think right now, based on where we are, based on, the fact that while we've gotten to a plateau in terms of the rate of increase in new cases, we still aren't where we need to be to do that broader reopening. And I think that's really what we need to be focusing on. And again, I know I sound like a broken record with this, but staying home and observing the governor's order in that regard and not going out unless it's for a life-sustaining business or to go to the grocery store or the pharmacy is really critical, because that is what is flattening the curve. And when you stay home, you stop the spread and you save lives. And so that really ought to be our focus at this point. Next, we have on the line Bruce. Bruce, you are live again, star three, to be connected to the phone line tonight. Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a small business owner. I actually started my business about a year ago. It's a consulting company. I'm the only employee. I tried filing for that pandemic unemployment compensation last Sunday. Could not get all the way through it because it would not, at the end, it would not recognize my federal identification, employment identification number. It says I don't exist. What do I do? I've emailed and called, but I can't get anybody when I call. And the email that I got said, if you're having trouble with the system, your question is not going to be answered.
Right. I was just about to ask. So there's two separate email addresses for people to use. And for the PUA program, which is the program you're filing on, there is a specific email address. And that's ucpua@pa.gov. So it's ucpua@pa.gov. So you want to send your request to them because it's specifically about the PUA program. And they'll be able to take a look at it. I'm unaware of a particular problem with the FEIN, but that would be good for you to email it to that PUA account, and that way they can take a look. And if there is something, you know, wrong with the actual system, we can notify our vendor, and they can get it fixed.
Okay, great. I think Bruce might not be on the line anymore, but I hope that answers his question. Thank you very much for that, Susan. Let me move on to one of the questions we received before the call tonight. So let's see. I applied for unemployment. I was denied. I'm a crossing guard that works 10 hours a week during the school year. It doesn't make any sense why I was turned down for unemployment compensation. Can you explain why that happened?
Without having a claim, not really. but, you know, there's no reason in particular a crossing guard would be denied benefits. The only thing maybe is if she didn't work enough in, he or she didn't work enough in the base year. To have enough of a wage history in order to qualify, because there's certain thresholds of, you know, you had to meet in order to qualify. So there's a total amount of wages, but then you also need, you know, two quarters of wages. One can't be too large compared to the other. There's a whole bunch of wage tests that everyone gets put through. So if she'd received a financial determination that said she was ineligible, then that would be the reason, because she didn't meet all the wage tests that someone needs for unemployment. But if that's true, then she would be eligible for the PUA program. So if she filed and, you know, received a denial for regular unemployment, she should then go file for the PUA program, and she'll likely be eligible for that.
That's great. Thanks. We'll follow up with that constituent and make sure she gets that information. I appreciate that. Okay, next, star three is how you connect directly with us tonight on the call. We have live Shelley. Shelley, you're on.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I was laid off in October for 3 months, and then my employer rehired me at the end of January, and then all of this happened. So when I went to file, it said, you have an inactive claim. Do you want to reopen that claim? So I clicked yes. And what I want to know is, will I have less of a benefit, less amount of time of benefits left because of that? And will that affect the $600 from the CARES if my unemployment is exhausted?
So for your first question, it will be affected by how many weeks of unemployment, how much money you would received on unemployment earlier in your claim. So there would have been a maximum benefit amount that came on your original financial determination, which would have been your weekly benefit amount times the number of weeks you were eligible for, which would have been anywhere from 18 to 26. So that would be your maximum amount. And then whatever money you drew down from that back in, you know, late last year, that would be subtracted from your maximum amount right now. So you would have remaining, you know, whatever the difference is. So what will happen, though, is as you draw these benefits down and you run out of money, you will then be eligible for the additional 13 weeks of PEUC, which, you know, we had mentioned earlier is we're about to get up and running in the next couple of weeks. So you would have that benefit available to you. And then if that ran out, you would then be eligible for the PUA program, which runs through the end of the year. And on all of these programs, we pay the FPUC $600 payment. And that payment only goes through July 25th, so it's not going to go beyond that. But that, it, no matter which type of claim you're on, the $600 payment is paid on top of your weekly benefit.
Okay, great. Well, we have just a few more minutes left. And again, star 3 connects you directly to the call tonight. To the extent we don't get to you this evening, stay on the line after we end, and you'll have an opportunity to leave your question in a voicemail box, and we will do our best to get back to you after that. But right now, we have Carol from Newtown on the line. Carol, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. When Congress passed the bill that self-employed people would be able to collect unemployment, I was so excited for unemployment that very day, not knowing there would be a separate portal for the PUA unemployment insurance. So what do I do now since I have already applied? I have not been denied yet from regular unemployment insurance. I'm sure I will be at some point, but what should I do? Should I do anything? Should I contact anybody? I'm afraid that my initial filing will inhibit my unemployment from the PUA emergency site.
No, just to be clear, no detriment. You're fine. Okay. So yeah, you'll get that information in the mail that you're denied if you're self-employed, and you can just set that aside somewhere. And you can go, if you haven't yet, you can already go file for PUA. Do that as soon as you can.
One more question. Why is it that the people that are applying for PUA can only collect from, what is it, April the 11th? On something like that, why can't we collect from the time that our businesses were shut down back in March?
You can actually. The application asks for your last day of work, so it then bases your first payable week on that date. So if you gave it, like, for example, I'm looking back at my calendar here, like if your last day of work was, you know, March 16th or March 15th, you know, it would make it the Sunday of that week. So it's all based on that, the last day of work that you enter on the application.
Yeah, Carol, you might be thinking about the extra $600 benefit through the CARES Act that is retroactive to the 4th of April.
My confirmation said that I would be eligible as of April the 11th, when I've been unemployed since the 14th of March.
Yeah, that's interesting. If you put in your last day of work as the 14th of March, it should be back to that date. So when we go live with the full system, which should be this weekend or so, then there will be a place on your dashboard that a person can submit a backdating request. So so you won't have to call anyone or try to get a hold of us. It'll be there in the self-service portal. So you can submit if you find that you are only being paid, you know, from the April, I think you said April 11th and on, you can submit the backdating request. It'll ask you what date you want to backdate, and I think it asks a few other questions, and then you submit it. And then a staff member just has to look at it and collect your information and then approve it if it's approvable, which it, you know, sounds like it would be. So you can look for that as of probably next week, since we expect to get this up soon. and then you can just submit your backdating request.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks, Carol. We are just about out of time. I want to thank everyone for participating tonight and joining us on this call. I hope it was helpful and we were able to answer the questions that you had. Again, if you have any additional questions that we haven't been able to get to, please stay on the line when we are done and you'll have an opportunity to leave those questions for us. But I definitely want to thank again Secretary Oleksiak for taking the time to being with us, for being with us tonight, as well as Susan Dickinson of the department for doing such a great job in navigating some of the issues that the folks here in Pennsylvania's 10th Senate District are facing. Thank you both again for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, everyone, thank you. And again, remember, I know it's hard. I know this is not an easy period for working folks as well as for local businesses. But it is important that we follow the governor's orders regarding the stay-at-home requirement. We are making a difference. We are flattening that curve. And in so doing, we're saving lives. So remember, stay at home. Stop the spread of the virus, and we will, in fact, save lives and get out of the other end of this, we're all working together to get us through it. So thank you all, and have a good night.
Thank you.